Well, this morning you've already heard a lot of statistics. I chose not to do a PowerPoint and turn the lights up because I want to see who I'm talking to, because I have to talk to consumers every day. I am glad to see so many ladies in the room. And for those weapons-toting cattlemen, if you haven't checked your weapon, I'd ask you to do it now, because I'm not the enemy. That's the first thing I want to tell you. I am certainly not the enemy. Meijer's about not just about price. The industry today is not just about price. It's about quality, value, and service. And we are proud to sell at Meijer only choice beef. That's it. I mean, I've committed to delivering to our customer base a consistent quality. And there's a reason for that, because if you listen to consumers today, you've heard already some of the major factors in why customers choose where they shop. What do actually consumers want today? You know, well, the number one thing that they want is a positive eating experience. That's the bottom line. They don't go back home after shopping and tell their friends and neighbors that I went to a store and I saved $4, or I saved this, or I bought that. They talk about the positive thing that they bought, whether it's protein, whether it's produce, whether it's something new on the market. They talk about that positive experience. Now, for us in our industry, we have to make sure that every time a customer, a consumer purchases beef, that they have that positive experience. And that first starts with taste. It is about taste. I mean, if you try something that you don't like, you don't buy it again. It's that simple. And at Meijer, we offer a double money-back guarantee that if you don't like what you buy, I will give you your money back double. That costs a lot of money today, especially at the price of beef. I don't have to tell you. But it wins over customers, because if you're willing to stand behind your product and what you purchase meets certain specifications to guarantee that eating experience, you can win in the market. It's also about flavor. Again, they get together, and there's a difference in the flavor in choice and select. If you don't believe it, you try. Go to a store and purchase choice or select or no roll, as Paul talked about. There are people choosing to do that because of margins they need to make. But when it comes down for customers to choose what they want, it's about taste and flavor. And certainly not third on the list is tenderness. Tenderness is important because you want something that's palatable. You want something to enjoy. And it's not just about eating a filet mignon. I don't like tenderloin. It doesn't have the flavor, a rich, robust flavor, like a strip steak or a ribeye. I mean, that's what we all eat. But we try to sell things that don't deliver what we're used to consuming ourselves. And juiciness is important. Now, why is juiciness important? You know, so many of us have tried to reduce the unit price of meat because of the retail being higher. How do we do that? We cut it thinner. I try to convince consumers today it's better to buy one thick steak and share it, because you can prepare it so much easier. You could, you know, put a little olive oil, put it on the grill, you know, sear the outside. Because why is that? Because you're going to maintain the juiciness. Have you ever tried to cook a 1/8-inch strip steak? You're laughing. I want you to try it. I'm here. I don't have, you know, a PowerPoint. I'm here to talk to you as a consumer. We're trying to sell 1/8-inch strip steaks. They buy them and they're dissatisfied. You know, at $9.99 a pound, a 1/8-inch strip steak, bone in, weighs 8 ounces. The reality is that's $5. Four children and two adults. You need six steaks, that's $30. Can you afford to buy that? And if you do, do you have that positive eating experience? We must make sure that our consumers today understand that the product we're selling is safe and wholesome. That's important to them. The media, I don't have to tell you about the media. They come, you know, is it safe? Can I rely on it? Can I trust you that the beef that you're selling is going to deliver the taste experience I want, the flavor, the tenderness, the juiciness? And if after I'm done eating it, will I be safe, or am I going to get some kind of disease? Am I going to be affected? These are the consumers today. They're well-educated. They're willing to spend for a positive eating experience, i.e., the restaurant business does 50% of the volume. We struggle together, but we're not in competition. We all want to sell more protein. And today, beef continues to be a part that's very important to us in the retail industry. Why are they confused? Well, it's our fault. Retailers, packers, producers. We've confused them. We operate in 5 states. I compete with over 40 different retailers in the 5 states, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, and Kentucky. The unemployment in Michigan and Ohio now exceeds 7.4%. Don't have to tell you about the car industry. But we still have people shopping for products that they enjoy, and it's not just, again, about price. But they're confused. What is natural beef? I get that question more often than not. Is the choice beef that you sell, what makes it not natural? How do I answer that question? Think about it. You have ladies that ask me, now I have only a choice beef program. I sell choice. I sell all natural choice, a NatureWell program, which is choice only, and CAB that's choice. So the success we have at my operation is choices. If you've never seen a Meijer store, they are average 200,000 square feet. We're open 24 hours a day, and we're about offering choices, not just in our meat protein area, but throughout our entire store. We sell hard lines, soft lines, and in fact, for those that didn't know, that the first super center in the United States was not Walmart. It was Meijer in 1964. And Sam Walton tried to buy Meijer, and Fred Meijer is still alive today. Entrepreneur at 88 years old, still the owner of the organization, said that this company is not for sale. That my pride is going to be able to offer to the customers that I appeal to consistent quality product and many choices from a range that allow them to feed their families and grow. That's how we based what we do in our business. That's why we're successful. So getting back to the national question, and nobody's raised their hand here to help me with the answer. So when the session's over, I would like one of you to come up to me so to help me answer this question. Is it better? And if it's better, why is it better? Then the next question they ask is, what's all about this organic beef? You know, what about organics? You know, is it a different animal? Or is it feeding different? Is it, you know, we could talk about all the attributes. A lot of us know why they're, you know, our organic farms, they feed organic feed, and, you know, and the cost is outrageous, all right? And maybe there's going to be a small segment in the future for those people who are going to choose to buy organics. At this point, we don't offer it. But if I ever do, it's going to have to be choice or better. Because I want to make sure whatever they buy, it's going to be, you know, a positive eating experience. The other question I'm asked so often is it really safe? You know, what are you doing about mad cow? We don't talk about it until an issue happens in Canada, and then it's all blown out of proportion. But we're all glad right now. It's real quiet. Nobody's talking about it. Isn't that the truth? But the minute something happens, boy, we're all over active about addressing the issue and how it's not going to affect our industry and how we've done everything. I want to be able to tell them what we are doing. I can't do that now because I'm not really sure what we are doing. I know what I'm doing about E. coli in my ground meat program. I won't bring it in my distribution. I have three distribution centers, and I will not bring it in until it's held at the manufactured and verified for 48 hours. I lose shelf life, but that's okay. I've never had a recall yet on ground beef. So I'm willing to make the investment to ensure to my customers and the consumers that I appeal to that I could hopefully provide them a safe and wholesome product. Do we really need to use growth hormones and antibiotics? I know that a lot of it's spawned. That's why I asked you to, if you had a weapon, check it. If you're with the pharmaceutical company, don't get mad at me. It is. You have to face what I'm facing. I mean, the only way we can grow our business is listen to the end user. The end user is our consumer. And the consumer is asking, do you have to use growth hormones? You know, I'm not here to say you have to. I would like to be able to tell them that in our all-natural program, which is NatureWell, which is another choice I'm offering, is it's minimized, you know, it's 120 days, and, you know, they've been able to develop a process that has appealed to consumer group that was shopping in Meijer but not buying my choice beef or my certified Angus. And the program, we've been in it for about 8 months, and it's all plus business. So what I'm telling you is by offering this third choice of an all-natural program has now brought more people to buy more beef at Meijer. Even though I was selling two levels, I wasn't offering a choice that these customers wanted. Did you know there's 40 Angus beef programs in this U.S. right now? And you need to review all 40. Those producers are, every one of them claims to be the best. There's preferred Angus. There's butcher's Angus. There's select Angus. There's select Angus program that's electronically modified to break down the muscle. Now, use all EB. Can you really believe, it's kind of like what Paul said, can you really believe that, you know, a restaurant that goes from a choice Angus or prime program to choice, to select, to no roll, still selling the same quality beef? Can we honestly believe that the information that all these Angus programs are saying can actually be as good? One has to be better than the other. The attributes of a choice or better Angus program has to be better than a select Angus program. If we also agree that by selecting different cattle, different weight ranges, it's going to make a difference. It's going to produce a more consistent product. And then deliver that wonderful eating experience we're talking about. It's about consistency. And that's what's important. So I chose 14 years ago to adapt to a certified Angus beef program. Not that I'm here promoting certified Angus, but at the time it delivered a consistency that I thought was important for my customer base. And today at 177 stores, I am now, I compete with a lot of other retailers that have a lot more stores, and I'm the highest volume retailer in the country selling certified Angus beef. I believe strongly because I'm committed to the program, I promote it every week, and I make sure that we offer a value, quality, price program that allows our customers to choose certified Angus Choice beef. What can we do to help consumers today to better understand what we buy? I really want to focus in on, you know, I think I've already provided something you've already know, you know, the attributes that are necessary, the concerns that they have, but there are things that the packer, the producer, and the retailer, I have responsibilities too. We're in this together. You know, the more you can produce, the better quality you can produce, the more I have to be able to sell. It increases my potential of volume and certainly profits for all of us. The thing we must do is we clearly must define the difference between choice and select and what it means to consumers. We have to be brutally honest with them. And there's nothing wrong if there's some cattle that's going to be no roll. I prefer not to buy select beef, but if it's going to be produced Nobody should be rewarded, in my opinion, to produce select beef. You should be rewarded to produce high-quality, consistent choice cattle that delivers and executes what consumers want today. As far as I'm concerned, you could take all the select beef and grind it. Because I'm not going to sell it at Meijer. I'm going to compete with retailers that sell select, and I'll match their price if I have to, so that I don't lose my customer base. Because the investment for me is more important in the future to be able to maintain the customer. Because at Meijer, it's not what I do in the meat department. It's what I can offer the customer to come in and expose them to so many other things that we sell. It's what we do as a company, not what I do as an individual or as a department. Everybody talked about the carcass weight range. It's too heavy. I'm not going to give you the statistics. The bottom line, it's too heavy. Bigger isn't always better. We know why it got bigger. I have to tell you that low grain costs, you know, dollar and a half, corn, you know, you could fatten up that cattle pretty cheap and get them overweight in a hurry. I think it's going to change. I think, you know, high cost grain is going to make a difference. But I think it's only short term. Long term, we have a decision to make on what weight range we want to produce. Now, why is it important? If anybody in this room goes to a retail store and went 30 years ago, a T-bone or porterhouse steak was in a 2S tray. A 2S tray was that size. In the 80s, we went to a 20S tray. In the 90s, we went to a 4S tray. Okay? I'm talking bigger size. And today, a T-bone porterhouse doesn't fit in a 4S tray. Doesn't fit. I'll give you one that you really get shocked about. Food service business, and I know you've all been out to restaurants and you've enjoyed white tablecloth and you enjoy eating the steak of your choice. You ever had a chance to eat a round steak in a restaurant? Anybody? Or a chuck roast? A few mom and pop restaurants maybe offer a pot roast, you know. But it's not very often. Certainly not going to get that at Ruth Chris. Right? Now, I wish I could sell you a steak at like Ruth Chris or some of the high-end steak restaurants. They retail now from $34 to $44 to $49 for a 14 to 18 ounce strip steak, tenderloin, ribeye, sirloin. And they don't even give you the vegetables. They tell you that we'll give it to you family style, $7.50, but the broccoli's for three people, right? Think about it, all right? I can't sell meat that way. I have to look at selling meat to consumers that they want broccoli and potatoes. They have to go to the produce department. So it's extremely important that you understand that size truly matters. The round steaks we sell today at Meijer, we're one of the few retailers that continue to sell round steaks. What I say is a boneless, whole-cut round steak. Most people are now selling the tops and the bottoms or splitting them simply because, bottom line, is they're too big. They do not fit in the largest size tray that I can buy, which is a 12S. Now, Cryback's answer to that is we'll make you a bigger tray. How big a tray do you need? Because it won't hold, you know, the body of the meat is too big. So what we have to do is we used to take the eye out and then put it together to make it fit. You're all nodding, you know, like, well, consumers want the eye. That's part of the round steak, okay? Now what we have to do is on the bone end, we have to cut 4 to 8 inches, straight line, to make it fit in the tray. And we have to take that byproduct that we used to sell as a round steak, make cube steaks or stew or grind it. So our yields go down because of the size. You see what I'm saying? I'm trying to give you the practical issues that we have in addressing today's consumers, because there is nothing wrong with a round steak. If you flour it, you pan fry it, and you put, you know, some onions with it and cook it slow like your mom or your grandmother did, it's outstanding. Not everybody could eat strip steaks, tenderloins, and ribeyes. A lot of people like chuck steaks too. If you haven't tried a choice Angus chuck steak cut on a put on the grill that's marinated, you need to enjoy something, because you know something? It almost tastes like a ribeye if you get the cut closest to the rib. That's the consumers I'm trying to appeal to, because I want to continue to sell more red meat. So think about it when I tell you the practical experience about size really matters. Livestock identification. I'm not here telling you should do it. If it's going to make the product safer that we could deliver to our customer base, is traceability important? It's important if the consumer believes it's going to make them a safe and wholesome product. There's cost to everything we do. But if we don't address these issues that consumers want today, the loss of business in the future for your children and your grandchildren in the farms and that you've had for years will have to be sold, because we don't need, like the gentleman said, we don't need any more golf courses. We need producers in this country to continue to produce product that we're proud to sell, that delivers and execute what the customers expect. On the retail side, we need to deliver better data-based information to producers and manufacturers. And we can do that. 8 years ago, there was called the IRMAS file. The IRMAS file is a Uniform Retail Identification Meat Standard. I'm soliciting your organization today. It's a voluntary program that I jumped on immediately, because I believed what it would deliver is be able to then, for us as an industry, retail. That what this means is that everybody would use the same UPC number for a T-bone, a porterhouse, a strip steak, and then we can then come back to you and really give you detailed data, just like the salsa and ketchup people. The reason why salsa people know they sell more than ketchup, because they have the UPC number, and that's the data where they get the information. We can't do that today. And if we could deliver that and have that opportunity to be able to do the producers and the packers, then you will better realize what we're really selling in the beef category, because it isn't all steaks. I'll get to you in my later presentation what we're really selling. So that's something we should do for you. We must be honest, and we must improve effective communications. I understand the need for the support, the checkoff system, and the advertising campaign that you have. You know, beef is what's for dinner. It's a great campaign. I think you have to reinvest some of the money in providing consumers today detailed information about the meat that we're producing, and improve the communications on the safety issues, on the quality issues. You know, it's great to talk about to have more beef, but let's give them reasons why to buy it. Let's address some of the issues that they currently have about safety, about wholesome product, about how the animal's grown. Why were you know, if we have to use antibiotics and growth hormones, maybe we should tell them why we have to do it. Maybe we should explain to them the positive reasons why. Maybe that's something you should consider in the future to help us. We all have responsibility. We must change the beef industry if you want to compete effectively with other proteins. You've heard about the growth in chicken and pork. I go to a lot of different facilities. The chickens are as big as they've ever been. Chicken used to take 12 and a half weeks to grow. The same chicken is now done in 6.5 weeks. 6.5 weeks. What they do differently, though, is when that large chicken breast, boneless, comes off that animal, where it used to be a natural cut, it's now shaped and formed by a machine to make it look like the same size. And the byproducts are done into nuggets and strips and a variety of other things, tenders. You ever heard the expression chicken tenders? Well, chicken tenders are basically the strips off the breast that's been removed because it's too big. But what it delivers and what people buy it for is chicken breast is because it's consistent in size. It's a great quality product. It can be enhanced or not enhanced, and still called natural. Did you know that? Did you know that you can buy enhanced chicken today that's all natural? The law changed last January. And based on the ingredient and what you put in it, I believe a lot of them use carrageenan, which is a derivative of seaweed, which is a natural ingredient, which holds the moisture. It can consider it all natural. So look at other industries and what they're doing. One of the successes we have at Meijer is that if you can be a great copier and tweak it a little bit, you sometimes become even more successful because the previous person did all the work. So all I'm doing is trying to give you a comparison with other proteins have done, and the poultry has certainly done an outstanding job. We must change to compete. And you've heard there is a diminishing demand for beef, but it's not in all segments. The diminishing demand is in steaks and roast. That's where the demand is diminishing. The ground meat category in the industry, and I could speak specifically at Meijer, is the fastest growing segment of all proteins we have in our meat department. The fastest growing segment. That's why the IRMAS information is going to be so important to provide you, is not that we're just selling beef, but how we're selling it. Ground meat represents in most retailers today between 60 and 70% of their total beef sale. You look at an ad, there isn't a week that goes by that the retailer doesn't have ground beef feature of some kind. And I offer it in a multiple different varieties. I'm about choices. I offered it certified Angus out of our full service counter. I have chuck, round, and sirloin. I have it in a modified atmosphere in 1 and 2 pound fixed weight packages because people want 1 pound packages. Have you ever seen a recipe that doesn't say put 1 pound in? Have you ever seen a cookbook that doesn't say 1 pound? I want to see it because there isn't one. And in our industry before, what we used to do is, you know, if you put another quarter pound in every package, you sell 100 more packages, you sell more weight. Well, customers today, they want to be able to look at a recipe and follow it. You know, 2 tablespoons, 2 teaspoons, you know, the dash of salt, I still haven't figured out what that means yet. But when it comes to the other ingredients, especially the protein, they try to be specific. We sell more grind today because we have fixed weight packages. We offer it in chubs. Also, we all offer an organic and a frozen chub, and we have a low-end, 70% lean. We also have it in chubs that are ground chuck, ground round. So no matter what form we put it in, it's convenience. And the convenience in ground meat is widely used, and I think that's the reason why. But at the same time, within the ground meat segment, which is now, like I said, 60 to 70%. The fastest growing segment within that is, this, for me, the premium grind. The ground sirloin, the ground round, that's 85, the ground 79. And the number one seller that I have now, you will not believe, is a 96% lean, heart smart ground meat. 96% lean. Because it clearly meets today's consumers. It's lean, very little fat, because, and we'll talk a little bit about what consumers, what information they want, and they want to know about fat, because it's one of the reasons and why they choose it. So I want to make sure you understand that in the retail side, that ground meat continues to be the fastest growing segment. The yield grades, you've heard this from everybody. There's too many 4s and 5s. I mean, I told you can grind and select. Well, you can grind to 4s and 5s as far as I'm concerned. You should be penalized to produce 4s and 5s, not rewarded. What we need is more choice cattle, and you should be rewarded for it. So if there's a system that would reward the producers for producing more weight control choice cattle, I think that it would allow you then to continue to be profitable and help us grow our business so that the end user would be more satisfied. The packer needs to produce closely trimmed primals. I'll talk about the excess external fat. that's a byproduct of producing a choice cattle. I'm not sitting here telling you. But what they do on the packer side is, if they go from a commodity trim to a quarter inch trim, the first thing they tell you is they have to have a tolerance. Well, when you buy and you pay a premium for quarter inch trim beef, and there's a 1/8 inch tolerance, what do you think you get? You don't get a quarter inch, you see. That's the bottom line. You don't get it. But they'll say to you, well, we'll sell you 1/8 inch trim at a premium, you know, because it takes more time to do it, but we need a 1/8 inch tolerance. So now you end up with a quarter inch. And so I have tested. I haven't been able to make it work yet. But I believe that the future could hold for us in some cuts. Totally trimmed beef, all the fat removed on the outside, external fat. Because there are many consumers that believe that the outside fat doesn't increase the eating quality of the product. It's the external fat is a negative when they view what's in the case. I'm not sure we're ready for that, but I think someday we'll have to address that. We must maintain the thickness. Everybody talked about the reduction in size. I talked about the Outback just went from a 12-ounce steak to a 9-ounce steak. And it's because they wanted to maintain the thickness. They wanted to maintain the thickness simply because the eating quality is going to be maintained because of how it's going to be prepared. I tried a sale about 2 months ago and tried to drive business with a retail for the 8-ounce steak I talked about, bone-in strip, and I advertised it by the each, trying to appeal to the consumers, because consumers look, sometimes price perception is important. It was $4.98 a pound. I advertised it an 8-ounce portion, $2.49 each, but I had to weigh it. It was the worst sale I've ever had. I mean, because they didn't want to buy it. So it is important that we maintain thickness, and you could help us do that by the portions of the finished primal. We need to promote the benefits of healthier cuts. There's many consumers today, and not just women, but all the people that are choosing to change their eating habits for either health reasons or a variety of other reasons, whether it's religious because halal or kosher, they have specific choices why they're doing it. And we have to address those issues and possibly consider promoting healthier cuts when we do our campaign. We must provide consistent data-based nutritional information and fat content on our beef cuts. We must do that. We must provide them detailed information because that's how they're going to make the decision, especially when they're feeding their family and their children. And there are store issues, too. The biggest one I'm addressing now and in the process of changing is how long can I keep the meat in my refrigerator? The majority of retailers in this country have a sell-by date on product. We have one sell-by date. What does that mean to a consumer? That means that if I buy it on that last day, January 31st, when I take it home, what do I do with it? Do I use it today? Do I stick it in the freezer? Is it still good tomorrow? Well, at Meijer, what we've decided to do is add some additional dates. We now have a sell-by date, a use and freeze-by date on the product also. So in addition to everything we sell, no matter if it's in a modified atmosphere package, cut and priced at the store, or brought in, we've shortened the shelf life because usually the sell-by date is the last day you can use it, and you have to freeze it on that day to make sure it's wholesome. So if you're producing product that normally had 4 days, we're putting 3 days on it and then adding a date to use or freeze by. I think that's the kind of commitment we have to do as retailers to be able to ensure the consumer's quality. And see, this is a joint effort. You have things to do. We have things to do. That's going to shorten our shelf life. But we have to be willing to make that commitment because our consumers are demanding this detailed information, in my opinion. There's also a consideration, should we put a third date on it? Should we put the production date on it? I'm not sure they're ready for that. but they might be required someday. You know, yous all know beef primals in a bag. Does anybody know what the sell-by date is on a beef primal? They don't put it on. Why not? Why doesn't a packer put sell-by dates on beef primals? I've asked them a lot of times. I get the same response. They don't want to tell you how old it is. And they'll tell you if it's old, it's better, right? Because it's aged. It's more tender. It's going to be... Well, when you open up that bag, all that blood runs out of it. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Because it begins to break down. Should we consider that? Is that important? Maybe it isn't. But that's one of the issues. Again, consumers want to know specifically when it was produced, when you cut it, how long is it going to last, what should I do with it? And finally, I think on a retail side, I think we owe it to you and all the consumers today to be consistent in our display technique. We adapted at Meijer several years ago a planogram that requires the store, and it's tagged, and every week you're going to find a T-bone steak in the same location. You're going to find a round steak and everything that we offer in the same location. It's really helped us produce consistency and got really positive feedback from our customer base, because consumers want to go in and buy what they're familiar with, what they're comfortable with. And that's something I think we owe it to you, is to maintain full variety and maximum opportunities to sell a full variety of beef, not just what's on sale. But if you have chuck roast on sale and somebody does want a strip steak, you should certainly make that offering. I want to really thank you for the opportunity to come. I hope that I didn't get you upset at me, and I hope that I assured you that the retail industry wants to continue to sell and are very proud to sell the beef that you produce.